Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Doctors Richard and Carolee Shamas as my special expert guests. Dr. Richard Shamas, MD, graduated Harvard and University of Pennsylvania, did research at the National Institutes of Health with geneticist and Nobel Prize winner Marshall Nirenberg, and has been in private practice for 25 years. Dr. Carolee Shamas, PhD, has been a clinical specialist in psychiatric nursing and a certified holistic nurse with a PhD in holistic studies. She has maintained a private practice in collaboration with Dr. Richard Shamas for 20 years, specializing in comprehensive treatment aspects of energy depletion illnesses. The Shamas Health Team, which also includes their daughter, Georgiana, provide an extensive variety of holistic health services, including in-office medical appointments, private coaching, lectures, public media broadcasting, audio and tape series, and best-selling books, including Thyroid Power, 10 Steps to Total Health and Thyroid Mind Power, The Proven Cure for Hormone-Related Depression, Anxiety, and Memory Loss. Their mission is to help patients feel their best and live life to the fullest. Good morning, Richard and Carolee. Welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Yes, hi. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good morning.
Good morning, Carolee. Good morning, Richard. Wonderful to have you online. Looking so forward to the insight you're going to provide and have the expertise in order to do that. Richard, first, we'll ask you a question. Please explain why you practice holistic preventive medicine. Most people are aware of what they call standard conventional allopathic medicine. Many people today measure doctors by the differences in the two. So why do you go into this field of preventive medicine when obviously it's not how the majority of doctors practice medicine?
Well, listen, I will tell you about that. It happened when I was an intern. I was a very straight medical intern, and I was pretty straight medical oriented myself. And at one of the grand rounds, we had the head of anesthesiology from UCLA Medical Center on the closed circuit TV telling all the doctors all across the country about his trip to China and how he filmed a lung resection that was utilized only acupuncture as the anesthesia for the operation. This was actually, to me, very impressive. And at the end of the operation, he showed a palm of his hand about 10 needles. He said, this is the equipment that they used for that anesthesia. And then he showed a whole corner of an operating room with all the tanks and the tables and the compressors and all the stuff that he said that's the equipment that he would need if he did the same operation as the anesthesiologist. And he held out his hand. He said, this technology in the palm of my hand beats our technology. We need to learn more about it. And at the end of all of that, the lights went on, and it seemed like 40 doctors in this room, the interns and the attendings, all of the associated doctors, they all got up and laughed, patted each other on the back and said, what baloney they're showing us now, and left the room. And I was just stunned. I was sitting there. I couldn't believe my colleagues just dismissed this. You know, this was years and years ago, of course, but still, they just simply dismissed it. There was one other guy who I became friends with, and we were sitting there. We were the only ones who thought that this might be real. I decided, look, if there's that new technology, or it's actually a very old technology that we don't know about, maybe there are some other technologies we don't know about, herbal medicines that I had not been taught, manipulative therapies I had not been taught. My wife had gotten involved in psychological therapies that are new and different. So it expanded my view of healthcare, and I saw that the patients benefited from an expanded view of healthcare. So that's how I got into it, and that's why I practice this way.
Well, that's excellent. That's a great story. Reminds me of a physician I know that I met in Toastmasters. We talked about acupuncture. And he poo-pooed it and said it was no more viable than witchcraft or any other form of quackery. I didn't see him for years. Then by a turn of events, he ends up doing a sabbatical and a tour in China. He was Chinese, by the way, never been to China. Goes to the hospitals, sees firsthand the effects of acupuncture, comes back and creates a small little college of acupuncture in Victoria on the island of Vancouver in BC. So this new information and data, I guess, does change some, and it doesn't change others. But Carol Lee, you're a certified holistic nurse. Now, tell us the difference between that status and a regular nurse with standard conventional training.
Happy to do that. A standard trained nurse these days usually goes through a four-year BSN program, which is the Bachelor of Science in Nursing. To be certified in holistic nursing, as with any other nursing specialty, of which there are over 60, I believe, one has to go through many rigorous steps. And so I've been involved with the American Holistic Nurses Association since the 1980s. They put together a certification program for holistic nursing, which was accepted by the American Nurses Association as a specialty in nursing. So what that means is that I have a broader way of looking at health and illness than most nurses do, and a much broader repertoire of tools that I recommend to clients. That can include energy healing, that can include, which you may know, a therapeutic touch up there.
Yes, right? We do, of course, absolutely.
Because I've been to your country and studied with some of the therapeutic touch teachers there. And I've been involved in that since the 70s. And Dr. Dolores Krieger in the 1970s was teaching therapeutic touch at New York University to PhD candidate nurses. And since then, nursing has expanded. Only a small percentage of nurses, but that percentage of nurses practices the way we believe is appropriate to practice, bringing in a lot of other modalities from all over the world, learning about herbs and vitamins and minerals. And mostly, I think one of the major differences is that we aim to empower the patient. We aim to give the person skills, tools, information, and support so that they can make their best health decisions and choose the practitioners that work best for them.
Now, that's so fantastic. Now, regarding career opportunity, it sounds like there's an enormous opportunity for nurses and men and women who are interested in nursing to pursue this holistic certification. Would there be a lot of opportunity in the field?
Absolutely. I think the opportunity comes from how we learn to practice out in the field. Right now, I'm doing work with families of autistic kids, and I'm hoping to eventually introduce aromatherapies, touch therapies, and many different modalities to help the family members as well as the client.
That's just wonderful. Now, I've read your book, Thyroid Power, many times. I learned of you, Richard, through Dr. Bland, who I have followed for a long time. I did work personally with Abram Hoffer, and that's who turned me on to FMU. I'm sure you know of him and know of his work. But I just want to give you an anecdote. Your book has really helped change our lives. And I'll tell you how. My wife, Tracy, was diagnosed with Hashimoto's, and she was given the typical prescription. At that time, for whatever reason, we came upon your book. We both read it more than once. We decided not to take the medication that was being prescribed. And she's ever since been on this desiccated thyroid, which is getting increasingly difficult to find up here. But I just wanted to tell you how we've also helped my patients, Tracy's friends, people, turning them onto the book and the idea. So what inspired you to write and publish Thyroid Power? Going way back before it was written, what really motivated you to punch this book out?
Right. We were in a private practice. Carly and I focused on the, you know, aspects of healing with each client. And we were getting good results. I was seeing people who were being referred from the Stanford University Hospital who were not getting what they needed from their thyroid program, or the University of California San Francisco Hospital, people were not getting what they needed. A lot of people in regular endocrinology offices around the county were not getting what they needed. And they were seeming to get what they needed from our office. And I would hear from these people that their aunt in Spokane or their sister in Chattanooga, because thyroid is very family related, the illness is inherited, family inheritance, a lot of family members had similar problems as the people that were being helped in my clinic, but were going through their local doctors and not getting what they needed. So I thought, oh, okay, maybe I can expand beyond my local city and county by writing a book about our success.
Great. Now, hypothyroidism is something that comes to mind that stood out in the book, and I know this is common, but a lot of people still don't really understand it. So how common is hypothyroidism, and what are the symptoms that people are looking for in themselves?
You know, I'll start with that, and Dr. Rich can fill in some more, but hypothyroidism is more common than most anyone listening believes, because, for instance, 26% of menopausal women have a sluggish thyroid, and as we age, it only goes down. And that's true of men also, although the ratio is often 5 to 2, I think, 5 female patients. Women have it a lot more than men do. And our bodies and our biochemistry is incredibly complex, so that when women are feeling lousy, whether it's childbearing ages or midlife or even older, it's chalked up to either, oh, you're young, you know, go play somewhere, or, oh, you know, you just had a baby, of course, it's postpartum depression. We've been told by a university endocrinologist who we respect enormously that 95% of postpartum depression is simply sluggish thyroid. The thyroid functions okay while you're pregnant, but afterwards, women can feel awful, and they have no idea why. So these are some of the things we've been talking to audiences about now for years, so that they understand better than their doctors do, and so they can say, look, I know it's my thyroid. I want a full panel, not just a TSH test. We educate people on how to fight for better thyroid care, because we figured the revolution's going to come from consumers who are tired of being told that they're crazy and just take Prozac.
And the importance of what Carly is talking about is underscored by just the epidemiology statistics. Thyroid problems have very quietly become the most common illness in many countries. I don't know about Canada as much as the United States. In the United States, there are 100 million prescriptions for thyroid medicines every year. And the one big drug, Synthroid, was one of the top, like the second most prescribed medicine of all. If you ask pharmacists, what category of medicines do they routinely fill the most prescriptions for? Is it heart medicines, lung medicines, dialysis, you know, all different kinds of body parts and body... Well, thyroid medicines top the list. But no one talks about it because thyroid is not an illness that kills you. It doesn't cause you to get your leg chopped off like diabetes can. So it's one of those conditions that just robs people of their full quality of life or their full energy. And it's an enormous public health issue. It's one of the most common illnesses going. It's an illness that is treated less than optimally most of the time,
resulting in further devolution of other problems, further symptoms. So that if you have a thyroid problem and you also have high blood pressure or high cholesterol, your thyroid goes untreated, your high blood pressure and cholesterol are going to be even worse, and that is causing death.
Part of my training is in physics, Newtonian physics, which is all about causality, you know, and one of my issues with medicine, when I originally had an interest in it, which turned me away from conventional medicine and brought me to the naturopathic paradigm, is I found that conventional medicine generally is not interested in causality. Most of the doctors, if you ask them, men, women, they still give you the same response. We don't know. No one knows. And yet, I'm not good with that answer. Neither is my wife and many of our friends and colleagues. So, in your opinion, you've worked with a lot of people, and this can't go back from an evolutionary point of view. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. I mean, is thyroidism and the various conditions associated with thyroid, is it a recent phenomenon? And if so, what's causing it? And if it's not recent, does it go back to the origin of time?
Wow, what a fascinating question. Well, what comes to mind for me is that we humans are constantly evolving. When we aren't using something, or when something becomes distorted in certain ways, then that can get passed on. And it is our confirmed belief that our environment that our thyroid gland is one of the most sensitive glands in the body and could well be used for most of us as a barometer for what's going on around us and where we're living and whether that's working for us. So many people are having thyroid issues because there are hormone-mimicking substances in the air, food, and water. They come from smokestacks at hospitals. The body gets confused and thinks they're estrogens. So the body goes crazy, and that's why we're having so much of this autoimmune hormonal problem.
Right. The evolutionary status of this is quite important. It's clearly an inherited illness, or the tendency for it is inherited. It runs in families, more so than diabetes runs in families, and we know that that's a very common inherited condition. The original mutation that may have caused it may have had some benefits elsewhere, but it's a mutation that results in the immune system wanting to make antibodies to constituents of the human body itself, not antibodies to viruses from the outside and bacteria from the outside, but parts of your own structure. You inherit the tendency to make antibodies to some of the assembly mechanisms of thyroid hormone. This is called autoimmune illness. Thyroid is the most common autoimmune illnesses. There are many others, and people inherit the tendency to make antibodies to their cartilage, and that's called rheumatoid arthritis, or to the insulin-producing cells, and that's called diabetes type 1. But autoimmunity, the most common form of it, is this high and low thyroid. Now, the tendency can be triggered by events in the environment or events in a person's life. The events in the environment that are triggering things are what Kyle Lee was talking about. We have now maybe 80,000 or more synthetic chemicals, only a few of which have been tested for their hormone-mimicking or hormone-disrupting capabilities. Many of them have this capability. We've seen some of this by accident. PCBs are anti-thyroid. Some dioxins are anti-thyroid. Fluoride is anti-thyroid. So the type of fluoride that's put into our water supply and so forth. So what you have is a lot of triggering of a tendency, of an inherited tendency, that can be triggered by this pollution in the air, food, and water with synthetic chemicals that have hormone-disrupting capability. In addition, certain events in a person's life can be triggers. For a woman, yeah, Carol Lee will tell you.
Well, there are certain times that women notice this problem more than others, and we tell them to be on the lookout. And these major times are puberty. And we tested all of our children in puberty, and all of them had thyroid antibodies at puberty. And so that's one. Right after childbirth is a crucial time that women need to know that they should get a complete thyroid panel if they have any thyroid family history, and make sure that they're properly medicated if that's a problem. So that's after giving birth. The next time is menopause. A lot of women start feeling lousy around menopause, and one of the reasons is the thyroid failing. And the other time that we notice it a lot is times of crisis, when there's someone you deeply love dies and you're having a really hard time. Those times are when the thyroid often goes out. Surgery, too.
You're bringing to mind research and reading material going way back now, and I know that you're well aware of this. Solve the Riddle of Illness, I believe the author's name was Langer. Is that true?
Dr. Langer.
And then he makes mention of Broda Barnes, and all this was news to me back when I was very young, and I had the good fortune of having a preventive medicine physician. And what he did here in Vancouver, he actually made it a mandate that every new patient had to be sent home and incorporate this home temperature test for thyroid. He thought it was so common that almost everyone had it. So can you talk about that home temperature test, whether it's valid or not, and then also how you bring it to the next level clinically to help people determine whether or not they in fact do have an actual thyroid condition?
Sure. The temperature test by Broda Barnes, one of the great thyroid doctors from the 40s and 50s, is very useful clinically in terms of determining who might be a candidate for a thyroid problem. Like all of the thyroid tests, and I'm saying all thyroid testing, this temperature test is not 100%. It's not gospel, but it's very useful. It's a fine piece of information. You get on several days in a row your morning temperature after you awake, but before you get up out of bed. You can take your temperature in any number of ways, and you just do it the same way each time. If you are prone to having infections in the ears, nose, and throat, tonsils, sinus, all that, then that oral temperature may not be the best way to take your temperature. You can put the thermometer under your arm, and that's a handy way of doing it as well. But there are normals for the temperature that's taken orally, or the temperature that's taken rectally, or the temperature that's taken under the arm. But you just do it the same way each time and see if you're within the range of normal by averaging several sets of temperatures that you take. If your temperature is low, that is a suggestion that you are a low thyroid person. So
low means below 70.
Charlie is saying that, well, what would low be? A standard oral temperature, for instance, a standard oral temperature during the day is 98.6. Maybe during the morning, it's closer to 98. Many of our patients, their temperature in the morning, orally, is 97. Or 97.1, 97.2. That's the suggestion that they may be running a little bit sluggish metabolism, maybe low thyroid. But you take the temperature, and that's a suggestion. Then you can do some other forms of testing. You get a good family history. You look at the physical signs. Many people with thyroid problems have a thinning of the outer eyebrows. They have a little edema, a little swelling, fluid retention under the eyelids. They can have puffy fingers. They can have scalloped edges of the tongue, suggesting that there's myxedema, thyroid fluid in the tongue. So in other words, some physical signs, some symptoms, a family history, and associated illnesses. Many people with thyroid also have allergies, or they have some type of autoimmune illness. A person with diabetes or rheumatoid arthritis is very much more likely to have some thyroid difficulty. So there's a long list of associated illnesses, and if you have those, that makes it more likely that you have a thyroid problem. And then you can do these tests. There are plenty of blood tests that you can do, but they are not gospel either. And the current use of blood tests to rule in or rule out a thyroid problem leaves many people in the lurch because they have the condition, but their blood tests are normal. And it's not just if you do one, you can do a whole panel. The whole panel can be normal. It's more likely that it'll show something if you do a whole panel of tests, but everything could be normal, and you could still have a thyroid problem. So the temperature fits into what is called a multi-pronged approach to making a diagnosis. And then the best diagnosis of all is to try some thyroid hormone. If you're a little bit sluggish, if you have fatigue, depression, overweight, dry hair, dry skin, dry eyes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, low libido, or a lot of the female problems that are plaguing women, all kinds of things from irregular cycles to the endometriosis like pain or the infertility, or if you do get pregnant, you have recurrent miscarriage, or all those menopause symptoms that Carolee was talking about. If you're a person who has that, then even if all these tests that we just mentioned are normal, you should get a trial of thyroid hormone, because thyroid hormone trial, thyroid pills, don't do anything if you're normal. But if you are an abnormal person, if you have low thyroid, you feel better. So that's one of the final arbiters. So all of these together are ways of diagnosing the condition, and temperature fits into that.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, that's wonderful. That provides the step-by-step procedure for people with interest.
Yeah, Carolee mentioned just now, she said, you forgot about reflexes. Well, yes, if you check the reflexes, especially the ankle reflex, that is a barometer. Again, like all thyroid tests, it's not 100%, but that is a barometer of low thyroid. If your reflexes are a little bit low and sluggish, then you might be low and sluggish metabolism.
So if we start bumping into walls when we're 56, we should suspect thyroid?
Well, yes. Here's the thing. The thyroid runs the brain, okay? And the brain is the most metabolic of all the tissues in the body. It's the most highly metabolic. So the metabolism hormone, called thyroid hormone, is very, very important. And if you're a little bit low in it, the brain can be functioning a little bit off. One of the more highly metabolic areas of the brain is the cerebellum, the balance part of the brain. The whole bottom part in the back is the cerebellum, and that controls balance and coordination. If you're low in thyroid, that can be off.
Can you talk a little bit about medications now, the difference between the Synthroid, the recombinant DNA format, and the more natural desiccated, like the Armour thyroid? Which do you prefer? When do you use one or the other? what the benefits are of one versus the other, please?
Well, I'm going to start because I'm the lightweight, and then Dr. Shamus will give you all the nitty-gritty. But what we've found is that different bodies respond differently to different types of thyroid medicines. That shouldn't surprise us because our bodies all have preferences to everything. So some people, even when they believe in only natural products, don't do as well with the natural medicine, even though they thought they would, and need some of the synthetic. Some people who do not want to try the natural may later find that adding that to their regimen helps them to feel much better than they have been. There's so many symptoms that we can have from thyroid problems. I mean, I've heard thyroid patients talk about things you just wouldn't believe, little symptoms that happen. And I think that the reason the doctors discount people, especially when they're female, is that we sound a little crazy, you know, because there are so many diverse symptoms, but it can affect everything. So if you don't want your brain to get sluggish, which is what our last book is about, our most recent book is more about what we've been learning about how thyroid affects the mind and the brain, including mood, memory, irritability, all of the things that we find we may be subject to also.
And what Carolee's talking about here is that in that last book, we really made a concerted effort to suggest what types of thyroid medicine are best for what types of this brain condition. For instance, there are many people who have depression, and they might do a little better with the natural thyroid than with some of the synthetic. But a person who has some of the anxiety effects of low thyroid, they often do a little better, at least at first, with simply the synthetic T4 thyroid hormone. A lot of the memory problems need a combination of T3 and T4. So this was what was revolutionary about our last book, was that we suggested that it's not just certain people, but there's certain kinds of conditions that do better with certain kinds of thyroid medicines. Basic two kinds that Carolee was talking about was that there's natural thyroid, that's a desiccated animal gland from thyroids are usually of pigs, and then there's synthetic thyroid that's made in laboratories and is just usually the final actual common pathway, the hormones, T4, levothyroxine, or sometimes the synthetic hormone T3, liothyronine. So the two categories of natural being one and synthetic being the other, they have subcategories. There are several different versions of natural thyroid. There's Armour thyroid, which is one of the old standbys, but now there's Natrithroid and Westroid, and there's the WP thyroid, there's a Proloid, there's a few others. And if they're harder to find in Canada, they're actually becoming easier to find in the United States, although in the United States, the insurance companies are not as happy to reimburse for natural thyroid. They should be, because it often does a better job for some people and some conditions.
And many people find that they need a combination, and that's been my story. Since I've been on thyroid since I was age 20, which is a while now, I first started off with synthetic thyroid, which is Synthroid, and that's what the doctors give everybody. And it doesn't work well for everybody. So for me, for instance, I was only 20 when I was diagnosed. After a few years, I felt, this isn't doing much, and I got off it. And I was actually okay for the next few years. When I really fell was when I had my second child. And right after giving birth to our second child, I couldn't get out of bed. So that's when we, you know, got me back on some thyroid medicine. And then a few years later, the UC doctor suggested some T3, and I went from feeling about 60% better to about 90% better. And that made a big difference. So there's the active form, which is T3. Most people know it medically as Cytomel. And there's the inactive, which is the T4, which is many of the other medicines are T4. Some of them are a mix. There's Thyrolar, which has T3 and T4 in a fixed ratio. There's Natrithroid, which has been later added. And I actually take now a combination of levothyroxine, liothyronine, and one more, Cytomel. Natrithroid, I take Natrithroid, Cytomel, and Levoxyl.
And she needs all three. It's odd that some people would need such a combination, but some people's thyroid situation is very simple, and other people, the situation is more complex.
Yes, it sounds good to me, and it sounds like it's quite suitable to answer the premise of common sense and functional medicine. I just love this field. you bring the power of eclecticism, of nature, of our personal identity and unique biochemistry. It's just absolutely wonderful to hear physicians and experts like yourself bringing this to mind. We need more of you, my goodness. Regarding your published work, if someone were to step right into Thyroid Mind Power, would you still recommend that they read your original bestseller, Thyroid Power?
Thyroid Power is what they call an evergreen. It's a classic. It's foundational. And they could start with Thyroid Mind Power and get a lot out of it. And they could also go back and read this book and probably pick up a little bit more, because we put a lot of what we've learned foundationally so that everybody could have that information. Then the middle book was more for people who feel fat. That was the feeling fat, fuzzy, or frazzled. So we tackled that one as well with the different endocrine types. And so we've tried to reach different audiences by writing different books and different voices so that people could begin to understand. And the one we haven't really written yet is, what if thyroid's the problem and your doctor keeps saying it's not? Because we have thousands of patients like that.
Yes, I'm sure you do. Okay, thanks for that insight. We're running out of time. I've got one more question, and then we'll talk about your website. What about athletic training in the context of sports nutrition? Have you seen the need for medication in athletes who train very hard? There's this movement right now within the field that perhaps intense training, especially in elite athletes, you know, causes such a strong catabolic effect that it affects the production of thyroid hormones. Have you seen this effect in any of your athletic patients?
Listen, this whole area, a lot of it has to do with the sports endocrinologist, Jeff Brown, who was a consultant for Nike. And they talked about the problems that some of the highly trained athletes, the endurance athletes, were having. Here's the bottom line on this, from my perspective, okay? You can have difficulty with the training and becoming more low thyroid if you have a tendency for low thyroid. If you're not someone who is doing that, and you're not taking the testosterone or growth hormone or, you know, a bunch of other things that might have a particular anti-thyroid effect, then it's not going to be beneficial to you to try to, you know, raise your metabolism by taking thyroid. For most people, and for athletes who are not tending toward hypothyroid from genetics, it is probably not at all helpful. It has never been shown to increase any kind of good performance when you are a normal thyroid person. But some of the athletes, because it is such a common illness, some of the athletes have family history of thyroid. Some have a tendency for this autoimmune thing. It's a very mild tendency, but it comes into focus when they do extreme training. So for the person who is a little bit hypothyroid, and that's what I'm saying, some of the athletes might be actually hypothyroid, that it's never going to be a problem until they do extreme training. For them, taking some thyroid would be like other people who are having thyroid deficiency kind of problems. They need to take some.
Yeah, that's an excellent response, and I'm sure our students are hanging on to that one. What is your website, and what will we find there when we get there?
The website is www.thyroidpower.com.
And what you find when you get there, a lot of information about how to diagnose and how to treat the condition. We're very interested in people who would like to treat the condition without prescription medicines, being able to get good thyroid intervention, and a lot of selenium and vitamin D, for instance, can help with that. Many people who are on medicine should also be taking thyroid nutritional boosters to help the medicine work better. So all of that is on the website. How to get really, really good testing is available. You can get a home test kit for thyroid that is absolutely available in Canada and would be useful to the people who were told, oh, your thyroid is normal, you know, from the regular test. If you want a really good test to check this out, or if you just wanted to do the good test right at the beginning, that information is also on the thyroidpower.com website.
Okay, very good. Thyroidpower.com. We will display that on your webpage reference and make sure that everyone is aware of it. Richard and Carolee, our time is gone. Thank you so much for participating as my special expert guests on this month's edition of SNU.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Yes, it's a pleasure. Thank you. Take care.
I would like to just ask you for a last comment. We always like to get something inspirational and perhaps motivational. Some word of advice, something on your mind perhaps recently that somebody can take and maybe apply. Do you have something that you'd like to maybe say before we go?
I would say as a holistic nurse that you are the expert on your own body. And if you think something's not right and you're not getting the help you need and the information you need, fire your doctor and just keep going until you find what you need.
And I would just echo that the thyroid is like one of the most common illnesses on the planet right now. There's probably 1 billion people that are dealing with some kind of thyroid difficulty. That's a lot of the human race. And although a lot of it might be related to the iodine shortage in certain countries and certain continents, it's still a great many people in the industrialized countries are having this autoimmune problem. So it's one of the most common illnesses. The likelihood that you have an issue with it is considerable. And so you ought to make an effort. If there's a problem, you ought to make an effort to see if thyroid is part of that problem.
Doctors Richard and Carolee Seamus have been my expert guests on this edition of SNU. They run a very successful clinic. They are completely dedicated to wholeness and wellness. And their mission statement, which I love, is about helping people feel their best and living life to the fullest. Doctors Seamus, we thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Representing lifestyle, new way of life. Listen, it's SNU, sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight, Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life, live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.